is not the topic of our lesson this evening, at least not directly. And yet, in a way, it's the topic of this whole series. Because in this whole series, my desire is to cause us to examine a little bit some of the complexities of God, that it's kind of a futile effort to try to explain God's works and plans in simple terms, because He's always confounded His people. Don't try to guess God's actions in simple terms. I found that out. Be careful even what you pray for. You might get what you want, or you're probably, as in my experience most of the time, I'll find my prayers being answered, but I don't even recognize it at the time and have to look back and say, oh, yeah. I say, well, that was a nice coincidence, a lucky break there. And then I look back and said, hello, what's the deal here? You know, I'm praying, but I'm praying and thinking in terms of one response, and in fact, the prayer is being answered in another way, maybe to negate the need, maybe to resolve another issue somewhere else that makes the current issue moot or irrelevant. But those God's ways are incredible. We've heard the word, Bible word, God works in mysterious ways, and the saying, God works in mysterious ways. But so much of that is true, and this evening I'd particularly like to look at a couple of mysterious ways in which God works. And it's not for the effort, purpose of trying to explain God's work, because that's beyond all of our comprehension. But it is, as we'll find out with the closing verse this evening, something basically that about all we can do is walk humbly with God and say, Lord, I'm glad You're in charge here, because I wouldn't have known what to do with that. Or a lot of people would have been upset with me if I had done exactly what You did. But I'm glad You're God. You've got big shoulders. Isn't it remarkable? Did you ever think about this? Maybe I ponder things like this. Probably my wife thinks I spend way too much time worrying about irresolvable issues. You ever think that a criminal can't be locked up until after he or she's committed a crime? I see a couple of nods. We read about crimes. We read about horrendous crimes, shootings. And we look back in hindsight and say, boy, we should have known that. That guy shouldn't have been walking the street. Oh, where should he have been? Are you going to lock him up for not having done anything? He might have had that crime in him from the beginning. Can you lock him up? Well, some countries, that's almost the basis of their justice system, based on suspicion, coerced confessions. But thank God that was not his method, and his method, his law, is basically what we've based ours on, fair trial. I think I've got one of these pushers in here. Oh, okay. There we go. So anyway, here we question not only the logic of that, but we want the courts to lock up the guys before he's done anything, just to keep him off the street because he's bound to do something. What kind of convoluted justice system is that? And we complain about the courts, and the judge is not happy. And the accused still trying to figure out how he got into this pickle in the first place. Make no mistake, God does not deal with sin lightly. After the flood, God blessed Noah, and he said to him, "And for your lifeblood I will require a reckoning. From every beast I will require it, and from man. From his fellow man I will require reckoning for the life of man. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his own image." God does not take sin, violation of his laws, lightly. And yet, as we think that we've just got about got figured out, and then God pulls something that leaves us scratching our head. There are times, certainly in Bible history, especially in the Old Testament, where God has taken swift and terrible action for a violation of his laws, particularly when it comes to disrespect, not respecting his authority. The sin of Achan, where Achan took and hid some of the spoils of the destruction of Jericho, hid him in his tent. His family could use him. It was a serious violation of God's law, but it was just a little bit, you know, like my family can use that. My family can use that. Well, we read in Joshua that God doesn't take a sense of humor about things like that. When it comes to violating God's commands, and especially not respecting God's authority, we see example after example of God's quick and serious judgment, because that must be ended right away. God continually says in the Old Testament, you must remove the evil from you, and we see punishments meted out, stonings for things that we don't even think of as capital crimes. A lot of times they just had a question of questioning, not respecting God's authority. But further, take Uzzah, the sin of Uzzah, the fellow who tried to steady the Ark of the Covenant, thinking he was doing the right thing when the oxen stumbled. Oh, we can't let this Ark fall. Well, Ken preached a lesson, some time ago, preaching about the sin of Uzzah. He brought out a number of issues or facts that said there were so many things going wrong on that day that God even didn't know where to begin. People didn't know where to begin. Because Uzzah and his people and David's people weren't even supposed to be messing with that ark in the first place. Who was? The Levites. And they were off somewhere else. Things had kind of fallen apart, hadn't they? But when something serious happened then, happens today. When something really serious happens, we can be warned, 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 warned time after time. I know, I've been. But when finally we get a kick in the you-know-what and something serious happens, it's like, oh, so that's what he meant. That's what he meant. God's justice. Here's a weird one. You remember, who remembers Mike Osborne? Oh, I tell you, I remember a few things about Mike, but I remember him especially talking about the sin of the Amorites. Gary Irwin. I got two great Garys here. I should have given them both a reading. Gary Irwin, would you read to us that passage from Genesis 15, I ask you to read, if you don't mind.
Genesis 15, verses 12 through 16. As the sun was setting, Abram fell into a deep sleep, and a thick, dreadful darkness came over him. Then the Lord said to him, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated 400 years. But I will pray that they serve as
What's happening here? Are the Amorites being set up? Is this just a colossal national setup for the Amorites? I don't think so. I think there are times when God lets us get ourselves into trouble. And we can turn. I've seen a few times of that happening personally. But this is on a national scale. In Old Testament times, I'd like to share with you some words of a John Piper who has taught a topic on redemptive history. And he's got a web page. He's a pretty good thinker, it sounds like. And he's got a web page, www.desiringgod, DesiringGod.org. And he offers these thoughts about the Amorites and what God's doing. The return of Israel to the promised land from Egypt would correspond with the completion of the iniquity of the Amorites. This is the meaning of the slaughter of the peoples of Canaan. God timed the arrival of his judgment with the fullness of the sin to be judged, not before. God did not jump the gun. He was, in fact, long-suffering and endured the idolatry sins and sins of the nations for centuries, giving them rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying their hearts with food and gladness. He references Acts 14:17. And then he references a Derek Kidner who says, until it was right to invade, God's people must wait, even if it cost them centuries of hardship. Genesis 15:16 is one of the pivotal sayings of the Old Testament. We hear in the Psalms something that we think more in terms of New Testament times, because sometimes we hear the saying, I think we know better here because we've spent so much time in the Bible from when we were children. But there's a tendency to say, well, the God of the Old Testament was a God of wrath. The God of New Testament was a God of mercy. Is that so? Or was he just waiting for the proper time to bring the Christ, his mercy into the world? Now, theologians who are much more advanced than I am can teach a much better lesson from that. But the whole theme of God's work seems to me to be timing, 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 timing. We'll see two or three more evidences of that this evening. But as we look through the Bible, it's timing, timing, timing. We see cases where people have been healed of their diseases. They've been rescued from a terrible plight. We remember the healing. We remember the joy. We remember the blessings. Because we really read about them. Unsaid is the days, nights, years of suffering and struggling and not knowing. You ever been there? Everybody has or will be, ultimately, sooner or later. When we just don't know, we pray, we hope, we trust, we try to. I try to. Sometimes we get discouraged. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but think of the woman with the hemorrhage. What a wonderful healing, blessed healing that was. She had spent everything she earned, everything she had for healing, for worthless remedies. How many times was she discouraged? Was she in tears? Nights that wouldn't turn into days forever. Days that wouldn't turn into nights. Thinking she was getting a little bit better because she'd have a good day and big turn down next time. kept on going on and on and on. Probably not knowing that one day she would meet the master who everybody was talking about. A trembling finger would reach out and touch his garment. Just hoping against hope by that time, is it possible? And Jesus turned and said, "Who touched me? Who touched me?" Okay, God has used the Israelites, his people, to destroy a sinful nation who has had generation after generation to get it right. The Bible tells us that God puts his law in the heart of the Gentiles, so we can't say they were ignorant, totally ignorant. It was a sinful nation who had had a chance to turn, didn't. But we've got the benefit of hindsight. But it was a sinful nation. It was a sinful nation. We do have the benefit of hindsight. But here's another one. Listen to what's happening, especially in the words of Habakkuk. When something else is happening, an evil nation is being used to discipline God's own people. Bob, would you read to us, please? In a sense, tongue in cheek, has God lost his mind? Has he been capricious and moody? Has he tried before with have the Israelites listened? Has he sent any warning to them at all? What's he done? What's he done? Who's he sent to the Israelites? Prophets. Prophets. One after another. Did they listen? Some did. Some did. I'm amazed at myself when I hear somebody preaching, "Better get it right." Before I catch myself, say, oh, you know, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. It's not that bad. You know, one of the best reminders to me, one of the people that reminds me the most is, it is bad. It's serious. And I better wake up. He didn't know I was going to do this. Oh, John, is that not that bad? I've started listening to the news a little bit more. It is serious. We want to be very conscientious and wise in our watching of the developments and evaluating the options that we have going forward into the year's election. Very watchful. That was not planned, but thank you for bearing with. And that's all. God is using the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, to carry out the harshest discipline on his people. An evil people against who Habakkuk wants to think is a good people, but in fact, Israel has carried themselves, acted the point, to virtually to the point of being totally destroyed as a nation. Totally destroyed as a nation because they hadn't got the word with the warnings, the teachings, the prophets. They'd even ridiculed them and persecuted them. And Jesus tells us, killed some of them. Wow. Can or does God bring about evil people to carry out his will when it's necessary to carry out an ugly task? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He says through Isaiah the prophet, for as the heavens are higher than the earth, and so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. He reminds us of that. In the New Testament, through the words of Peter, Scott Blake's going to read us the words of Peter in the New Testament.
2 Peter 3, verse 9. The Lord is not slow concerning his promise, as some count slowness.
Patience. Patient. The work of God seems to take a really bizarre turn not too long after Jesus' crucifixion, death, resurrection. There's a man named Saul of Tarsus who has dedicated himself through the words, his own words, and the words of Acts 26, as written by Luke, that he had dedicated himself to wiping out this new movement, wiping out Christianity, carrying people the way back in chains, bound for trial. Was anything going to happen? Wouldn't God strike this man dead? He's done that before. Why doesn't God just strike Paul dead? He's got other disciples he can use to bring the message to the Gentiles, wouldn't you think? Can't begin to go through all of God's dealings except he had a bigger plan going on.
He had a good heart, in spite of the fact he's misguided.
That's right. He said in his own words, I believe, that he acted in ignorance, thinking he was doing God's will. Do you think he heard, it's a little aside here, do you think he heard or took note of Stephen's cry, Lord, forgive them, for they know not what they do? Yeah. He was right there, wasn't he? Well, we know this went on for a time. But so many good people had to die. So many good people had to die. So many good people's families praying. Prayers that didn't seem to be heard for a long time. Joel, would you read to us from Acts 9, please, sir? Couple of questions. What do you think was going on in Ananias' mind when God spoke to him? We get a clue, don't we? However God was speaking to old Ananias, wow. I hope he must have been pretty clear about it, because if it just came in the terms of a little thought or a vision, Ananias was pretty sure, I would think he was pretty sure he was losing his mind. That something's not right here. Something's not right. But he was willing to put himself to trust God, trust the vision, trust the message that he thought he had. It sounded good. Sounded right, but I bet he still was concerned that he was putting himself at risk in harm's way. Don't you? Wow. Have we ever put ourselves in harm's way to do something we felt was the right thing to do? Would we ever think about it? Worth thinking about. Nathan's done an outstanding job recently of teaching. I knew Nathan's and my lessons were just going to go together just like that. And they've come even closer to that sometimes. But said to Nathan, originally I wanted to talk to him and make sure we weren't stepping on each other's feet, and then finally realized that the Lord had given each of us our topics and set up this timing by his work and not ours. So we were going to follow the Lord. Lord, don't make mistakes. Nathan's been teaching how God's work. We're working for a God, we love a God that might even let us die. That's how he put it. I believe it was last Sunday. It might even let us die. He still provides for us. That's the theme. That's the point of the whole message, isn't it? He still provides. He provides a glory that Jesus even used as an analogy. The pains of childbirth that are forgotten when the joy of the child arrives. I thought that was pretty powerful, and I'm not even the one that has to dread or experience those pains. My greatest love, admiration to those among us who have and shared those with their family. Other question is, did Paul get off scot-free for the havoc he raised? What did God say to Ananias that he was going to show Paul? How much what? He must suffer. He must suffer for God's name. Wow, he got the right man, didn't he? He got a man with a passion. He got a man with a passion and a conviction. He got an angry young man, a murderously angry young man, didn't he? Wow, look what he did with him. It could be argued that because that happened, we can believe our ancestors were brought the message today. And the ancestors of all Gentiles, non-Jews, who have been given the message from an angry young man of conviction that God says, Saul, I want you on my side. You've got something I like. I want you on my side. Isn't that powerful? Isn't that powerful? Folks, we can teach that lesson to anybody we meet. We might We don't have to be prison workers to land in this situation. It's a great prison lesson, but we don't have to be prison workers. How many of us have friends with children? Or have had friends with children? In this horrendously hard, difficult society in which to raise a child, and we see more and more contradictions, conflict all the time, peer pressure. We may ourselves, but more likely here, be come to by any of our friends saying, I don't know what happened to my son, my daughter. I've lost him. That good child, of just such a good child here 2 or 3 years ago. I've lost him. They won't even listen to me, but maybe they'll listen to you. Maybe they'll listen to you. Every one of us has a blessed opportunity to touch someone's life somewhere or other if we just tell God, one, we're willing, and second, Lord, help me. Help me. It's a fair question, I think. Lord, with your help, I will. I think that's a fair question because he promised that help even before we ask it. But we just want to make sure that we ask it just for our own reasons, own encouragement. Well, to make sure his disciples didn't get discouraged because they were the ones that were going to run into all this trouble, Jesus said, something that I guess I've just recently really, really discovered. Really discovered. And that is, he warns his disciples that trouble's coming. I know there's at least three places in the Bible, in the New Testament, in Jesus' teachings, he says, "See, I have warned you. I have warned you so that you will not fall away. So that when things get bad, you won't think that all of this is just a one-time thing, that Jesus is a myth, and the world's falling apart, going to hell in a handbasket, if you will, street language." But sometimes we feel like that's what's happening. And we say, well, it must have been all wishful thinking. Well, Jesus says, don't forget. He says, don't forget, I have told you. What's he say? John 16, he says, "I have said these things to you to keep you from falling away. They will put you out of the synagogues. Indeed, the hour is coming when whoever kills you will think he is offering service to God. And they will do these things because they have not known the Father nor me. But I have said these things to you that when their hour comes, you may remember that I told them to you." I always read that in the historical context in the past. The more I read the Bible, it just seems to be a perpetual thing. And we need to remind ourselves and others. When you go out those doors there, when you go into that world, when you go to that college, when you get out of this jail cell, when you're out there, when you're out of these doors, when you're at that college, when you're in that new group of people you're going to be working with, when you're working with that, wherever you're working, political group, when you're at that new job, old Satan's going to be after us, every one of us, like a duck on a June bug. Peck, 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 huh, Glenn? Peck, peck, peck. And just waiting for you to have a bad day. Who has bad days? Every one of us, I think. If you don't have a bad days, I want to talk to you and you tell me how to avoid them. Bad days. And Satan's just waiting for us when he can whisper something like, "I'll do this and feel better. Do that and feel better." To maybe a criminally inclined mind, but trying to get better, he says, "Easy money. Easy money. Get high. Get the girls you want." Whatever. The lies are as many as there are people. The temptations as many as they are people. But he also says this. Not to give up hope. A couple of thoughts to share in closing. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving. Remember the "with thanksgiving," for we are so blessed. Even though we can forget it for times, can't we? We're so blessed. Present your requests to God, and the peace of God which transcends all understanding will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Did you get that? The peace of God? He didn't promise you all the money. He didn't promise to remove you from hardships. But the peace of God, isn't that ultimately where we want to get to? So much of the time Jesus talks about peace. Here I'm worried about whether I'm going to have enough money to get this thing or that thing. Until finally I socked myself in the head, which you've seen me do about every lesson so far. Said, "Wait a minute. What really, really, really counts?" Jesus says, I say to you, whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Until now you have asked nothing in my name. Ask and you will receive, that your joy may be made full. In a future lesson, we're going to talk about the sufferings. When the easy times don't come, but the sufferings do. Nathan's touched it real well. I have a few additional thoughts I'd like to share. Thank you so much for your time. Let's see, where does that leave us here? Yeah. The scales of justice are back in balance when we look beyond into eternity, and all is well. Thank you. Well, Elton, would you dismiss us, please?